Can you imagine being at the top of your game? Maybe you are. Maybe you're the best at what you're doing right now. Now hold that thought. Can you imagine going to your doctor and getting told that you have a life-threatening disease and you are probably going to die within 12 months? My next guest faced that, and he beat it. This is a story about inspiration, determination, spirituality, and strength. Stay tuned for the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, hello. Welcome back, everybody. CJ Evolution podcast. Patrick here, host and creator. Thank you for tuning in. I know you got many options, but I thank you once again for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. That's how we continue to grow. Share the show with family or friends and give us a rating on iTunes. We sure would appreciate it. Big shout out to all those brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. You're doing a very difficult job in a very difficult environment. We salute you. And if you're a first-time listener, welcome. We hope you enjoy the show. If you're a longtime listener, welcome back. And speaking of uniforms, big shout out to all the brave men and women in the United States military, the toughest, biggest, baddest military in the world. Thank you for serving and protecting this great country. And my next guest, you're going to love Joel Thor Neeb. And Thor was his call sign in the Air Force. He was an F-15 pilot. He's escorted U.S. presidents through the sky and flew missions to ensure the safety of the country after the attacks of 9/11. He was the tactical leader of 300 of the most senior combat pilots in the Air Force, and he oversaw the execution of a $150 million a year flight program. Thor was named the top instructor pilot at the Air Force Flight Training Headquarters, and he has flown thousands of missions teaching pilots from 25 countries around the world. This is such a great show and inspirational. Like I said in the beginning, the biggest battle he faced was the internal battle with his health. Enjoy this great an inspirational interview. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Honor and a privilege to have my next guest on the show. He's Joel Neeb, otherwise known as the Hammer, a former Air Force pilot. Sir, welcome aboard. Thank you for being here.
Patrick, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, I got to ask the obvious question, sir, or Joel. I'm sorry, that's my military coming out of me calling you, sir. How did you get the nickname Thor? Because I think it's badass.
Yep, so that was my call sign. That's what I flew as a fighter pilot. And for those of you who know, you know, if you've seen the movie Top Gun, you know that we've got nicknames for each other. That's just what we did a long time ago in the flying world. And so both in the Navy and in the Air Force for the fighter pilot side, we all have call signs. And that's what we've been known as for the rest of our existence. So I can tell you folks that that I've, you know, talked to every day for 10 years, and I have no idea what the first name is because we've only used call signs. With each other.
That's cool. Well, in the Army, it was a little bit different. We had nicknames like dumbass. I think it's cool that you have that nickname. That now it's that's part of your business too.
Yeah. So that, you know, we kept the brand, and when I joined Afterburner, Afterburner was around for about 15 years before I joined, and of course they brought a lot of fighter pilots on the team and kept the brand of using call signs along the way.
Well, I want to talk about your business Afterburner because I think you're just killing it. You're doing so much good things out there, Joel. So what, backing up a little bit, going back in time, what made you join the military?
For me, it was a calling as I was leaving high school. I felt like I had, you know, kind of a lack of discipline. And if you saw me, you wouldn't think, you know, I wasn't doing anything that out of line, but I just didn't feel like I was setting myself up for a success story as I was getting ready for college and leaving the home and everything else. But I had an opportunity then to apply to both West Point and the Air Force Academy. And I had to go through the process of getting senators to endorse me for that and go through interviews with them. And I was fortunate enough to be accepted to both West Point and the Air Force Academy. I had a really difficult decision to make. And I have a lot of great friends that are doing amazing things from West Point, but I ended up going to the Air Force Academy, and that kicked it all off. Just, you know, this leaning towards service at a young age and having that calling, like I'm sure you did, Patrick.
Yeah.
Well.
Well, I mean, and obviously you're smart, Joel. you mean you got into West Point and the Air Force Academy, and a lot of people don't know this. Maybe, I mean, well, maybe a lot do, but some don't know that you have to go through this process to get in the Air Force Academy. You mentioned you have to get senator and Congress people to endorse you, right?
Yeah, that's right. So it's a strange application process before. I mean, you don't just send in like your essays and your SAT scores in your report card like you would to some of the other schools. You have to first go through the gatekeepers of the senators, the vice presidents even, and Congress people.
Wow. And how long does that take from the time you apply to the time you're accepted for you, Joel? How long did it take?
It's a long process. So the entire thing kicks off in like midway through your junior year, and it finishes up about midway through your senior year. So it's a good 12 months of working on it.
Wow. And talk a little bit about your, I mean, you've done so many missions. You were a mission commander. Talk about your experience. I know you've escorted presidents throughout the sky. I mean, talk about some of your experiences as a fighter pilot in the United States military. And thank you for your service. If I didn't say that, thank you for your service, sir.
My privilege. It was such an honor to serve on the elite teams that I was a part of and with the individuals that I got to meet. But yeah, when I was a pilot, I got more than 2,500 hours as both a fighter pilot and then a trainer pilot. So I flew F-15s, T-38s, T-37s, the T-planes are the trainer ones, and I was an instructor in those. And in the F-15, which is where people usually want to ask about the mission, during that time I was escorting the president, as you alluded to, as well as flying alert missions off the coast of the United States after the attack of 9/11 in the mid-2000s. We had a quick response effort to make sure that nothing like 9/11 ever occurred again. And so we needed aircraft to be able to be airborne within, unclassified within about 2 or 3 minutes to go after whatever challenges was showing up.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about technology, Joel? Because, I mean, you always see these movies, where somebody, in the military sitting in some trailer in the desert somewhere with a drone. And I know as technology advances, I mean, there's going to be more and more aircraft that don't have, human pilots in them. How is it like in the air? Is the Air Force my guess is you're always going to have the human element in that cockpit, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And that's my prediction, that we will have to have somebody with a human set of eyeballs in the sky watching things take place. I think what's going to end up happening is that man or woman is going to have drones that are in effect his or her wingman. And those are going to just be the missile carriers, and they're going to be out there, and that person can be directing them. You could do this with that person on the ground, but as we learned through simulators in the Air Force, there's really no replacing being in the sky. And our simulators are fantastic at this stage, but you can't just do things through simulation. You can't just do things through technology and still get the desired effect.
And you need to rule the sky first in any combat zone. I mean, for people who don't know that are listening, you need to rule the sky, correct?
Yeah, that's a really important role that we fulfilled in an F-15. We've had air superiority in every engagement we've been in since Vietnam. So the early 70s is the last time we were contested in the sky, if you can think of like Vietnam era MiG planes that were going up against us. Since that time, the only engagements have ended up with us victorious in the skies. In fact, my plane has 109 kills and zero losses in its history. Yeah.
Now, who comes close? I know we're the biggest, baddest, kick-ass military in the world. I mean, who comes close to us as far as Air Force-wise, Joel?
Yep. So I've trained with 25 allied countries, and I can tell you from the ally side of the house, Great Britain's fantastic, Australia's fantastic, Canada's great. The Israel team is fantastic just by the nature of their mission. And when you fly with them, I get a lot of opportunities to fly and train with those folks. And they always emphasize that, look at the horizon. Look at that tree you see off on the horizon over there. That's the edge of our country. So, like, when we get the call to go defend it, I'm defending between here and there. And my family lives in that region as well. So we're a matchbox on a football field of people that hate us. And we've got to be effective at defending this little spot on the ground. So they got very, very good at the flying component.
Yeah. So what was the most challenging thing or mission, if you can talk about it, that you went through in your military career?
So I was fortunate. The challenge aspect of the mission, we trained so well that we basically trained ourselves out of a job. It was almost like a samurai of old where, you train for 80 years with a sword and you're so good at it that you're uncontested. So the F-15 in Iraq and Afghanistan, was sent over there early on in the war, and then really didn't have a role after that because they had already established air dominance. Nobody was going to go up against them. Matter of fact, if someone forced an Iraqi or an Afghani to take off in an airplane, they'd immediately run away and fly away to another country as fast as they could.
So it's
exactly where you want to be in terms of getting the job done and being formidable and everything goes along with that, but it means you have a very much diminished role compared to your brothers and sisters in the rest of the fight.
Yeah. Now, what? Switching gears a little bit. What about personally? What's the biggest challenge you ever went through personally?
So personally, that's an easy one. Back in 2010, I found out that I had stage 4 cancer. Just hit me out of the blue. I was being looked at to become an Air Force Thunderbird at the time, and just feeling great and on top of my game, on top of the world. And I found out I had this cancer that had spread all throughout my abdomen. And it was really poor prognosis. They gave me a 15% chance to live 5 years through this. Well, and then unbelievably, at the exact same time, my son, who was 3 years old at the time, we discovered a tumor in his lung. Totally unrelated, had nothing to do with each other. But he's got this tumor growing in his lung. I've got massive stage 4 cancer. And I mean, like, within weeks of each other, both of these things were discovered. And it was just a living nightmare. Every morning I woke up and said to myself, thank goodness it was all a dream. And then I had to slowly come around to the fact again that, nope, you've got cancer. Your son's got this weird tumor. And we're just going through this horrible experience.
I cannot imagine. I mean, I can't even find the words, I can't imagine, Joel, going through something like that. And the obvious question I have, and I'm assuming your son's okay. I hope he is. Thank God.
You're doing great. Yep.
Yeah. And I'm glad you're here. How did you, the obvious question, I'm sure you get this all the time. You had stage 4 cancer. I have family members that didn't make it through cancer.
Yep.
How did you beat this? I mean, obviously it probably fell back to your training, but tell the story.
I ask myself that question all the time, and you can imagine I get asked that a lot, particularly by folks who have cancer, and because I'm so vocal with it. One of the things I'd learned, Patrick, was when I was going through cancer, there wasn't really many people that were coming back and saying, "Hey, I had cancer. It went okay for me. I'm actually doing fine now. Let me tell you the story of hope." If you Google any cancer, you're not going to find those stories. You're going to find all the people who are at death's door or who have lost a loved one. Because everybody else just goes on with their lives. If they get better, it doesn't make much sense to go back and keep logging into the internet and telling the world that you're still better. Mm-hmm. So that was a big missing component of my battle because it's just so negative when I would go online. I say all that because I'm very vocal about how great I'm doing right now and how I want that to be a goal and a hope for the people that are fighting this disease. But they always say to me, "But how did you do it? How did you get to this point?" I don't know. I mean, it's the grace of God. I can say that I had a changed outlook through this experience, and I spent about 30 days feeling sorry for myself and wondering, why this happened to me and why didn't this happen to somebody else and why is my son going through this? And I had kind of this epiphany and this transforming moment where I decided I wasn't ever going to feel sorry for myself again. And I can tell you that outlook is 80% of the fight. Having watched a lot of people succumb to this disease and others that didn't, how you approach this is 80%, 20%, we're all going to die no matter how bad we wish not to, but you can affect so much of these outcomes with the way you fight it. And that's my takeaway for folks when they ask me, how do I beat my cancer?
And I know you talk about this a lot with your company Afterburner. And again, that's a perfect segue. And I agree with you, Joel. I mean, mindset is what you're talking about. And this applies to everything we do, leadership, whatever. But obviously, you had the right mindset. Now, I don't live in a bubble. Most people don't. You have to have the right mindset. I mean, you have to be realistic, too. But you are so right on that you have to be in a place where you're going to beat this shit. And I liked how you said, "All right, I spent some time feeling sorry for myself, but then I'm sure, obviously, you said, well, I got a son, I got a family I got to take care of, so it's not really about me anymore. I got to push this. I got to beat this shit," right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, and I came to this conclusion I'll tell you real quick the actual story because it's kind of amazing. I was being dropped off in the middle of Houston at this cancer hospital that specializes in my cancer, and it's this huge, enormous, tall hospital downtown. And for whatever reason, in the 2-hour drive to this place, I was really nervous, really anxious. I couldn't put my finger on why. And I realized as I'm getting dropped off here why this particular trip is making me so anxious. I mean, I've had cancer for 6 weeks now. There's nothing special about this trip, but it's because as I'm looking up in this building, I realize that I'm going to die in one of those rooms, and I'm walking into the place that I'll take my last breath probably within the next 12 to 18 months in one of the, looking out one of these windows. And the weight of everything just kind of fell on me in that moment. And I felt so sorry for myself. And I remember staring up at the sky and closing my eyes and tears streaming out. And I'm cursing God. And I'm basically saying, where are you, God, in this entire experience? You know, I'm doing this by myself and my son's going through this. This isn't fair. And as I opened up my eyes from this, you know, feeling the worst I've ever felt in my life, I lock eyes with another person who's going into the hospital. And it's a girl. And she's got beautiful blue eyes. I'll never forget them. And she's got a bald head and she's got a surgical mask on and she's probably about 10 years old and she's being wheeled into the hospital by her parents. And as she's looking at me, I can tell she's really afraid. Our eyes stay locked the entire time she gets wheeled in. I still don't know why we kept looking at each other. But in that moment, it was amazing. I went from feeling the worst I ever had about myself to thinking I've lived the most incredibly blessed life. I'm a fighter pilot. I've got two incredible kids. I've got a great wife. And I've done the most amazing things I could never have even dreamed of as a kid. And this little girl won't live to be a teenager. Help her, God, not me. I'm sorry for, you know, feeling so bad for myself. And in that moment, I realized that I got to decide. And I thought about that little girl a lot. And it was the thing that taught me that if I could go from my lowest I've ever felt in my entire life to in the next breath, transferring all of that to another person and wanting to help them out. And I realized that I was making the decision to either feel, you know, to have a positive outlook or to be negative. And I said, for the rest of my life, no matter how short that is, I'm going to do the right thing and not feel sorry for myself.
Jeez. And you started a youth outreach program in San Antonio. You've reached thousands of kids.
That's right. 15,000 kids since its inception. And it's still going strong. I'm not associated with it now because I moved to Atlanta, but it's doing great. I still check in on them. And we helped out with some impoverished communities in San Antonio. They got a 35% high school graduation rate, and we helped them raise that to 60% before we were done with them in a 5-year period.
Jeez, brother. It is so amazing that you beat this crap. And you competed in New Zealand Ironman, and you were on American Ninja Warrior? Do I get that right?
I was. Yeah.
So dude, that's insane.
Yep. I'm so lucky. I'm so blessed, Patrick, because, you know, I just got to pinch myself to believe that after everything I went through, that I get these chances. I never, ever, ever would have ever dreamed that, you know, my big goal was to live 5 years and maybe my kids would have like this memory of their sickly dad up in the, you know, in the upstairs bedroom. And to be so healthy now and doing so great, I just feel like it's an incredible second chance.
Jeez, it's amazing. Now you got to ask the obvious question. How was American Ninja Warrior? I watch it. Most of America does. I mean, what was the experience like? I mean, it was crazy. You guys are like jumping around. I mean, I could have done it when I was maybe younger in the military, but I can't. I mean, just amazing what you guys are doing.
Oh, I have no business doing this. So I'm 42 years old. These kids are 22.
You're old. You're old, buddy.
Well, I'm definitely old, easily old enough to be most of their dads. So, you know, I'm the old guy to them that's flying around these obstacles with them. But it's a great community. They taught me how to do this. I started the journey about 2 years ago, and I went through a lot of training with these folks. And it's not rocket science. Like, you get, there are a lot of techniques that sure. they use to get through these obstacles. And if you just have a little bit of agility, and I've always come from strength. I've been a weightlifter in the past, so that's something I had to, you know, I had to trim down a little bit in terms of like losing some of that muscle mass and getting a little bit more agile. But other than that, it's been just awesome.
That's amazing. Let's shift gears a little bit, talk about Afterburner. What the great things you're doing with this company, brother?
Company that was established to take all the great things that we learned as fighter pilots and this amazing process that took me from a guy driving a car one day to 18 months later flying my own $50 million jet fighter and going faster than the speed of sound. This process is so transformative for me as an individual and the teams I was a part of that we said, you know, if we could bottle this, you can do amazing things with the business world. Mm-hmm. And Afterburner was doing just that. And so just as a quick summary of what we support, we build out strategic plans with teams. We're helping a company who's going after $100 million deals in the tech sector to build those. And it's amazing how our process translates from our, you know, former worlds of complex flights and dynamic environments to the complex dynamic markets that these teams are taking on in the corporate world.
Yeah. And you talk about how important, we all know how important leadership is, but why do so many organizations fail at leadership or leadership development within, because this is so critical to organizational success. Why do so many businesses fail out there with this?
I really think it goes to the Peter principle. If you remember the Peter principle, you rise to the level of your incompetence, and you continue to get promoted for doing the last job well, but you're never really shown how to do the next job well. Mm-hmm. And that was something that the military, you had no choice, because it was such a public forum. Meaning if you were failing in the military, everybody saw it, because your lives are on the line. So they took it very seriously. In the corporate world, you can be great at sales and just be the number one salesperson, but then you put in charge of a sales team, and it's a very different skill set to lead that team, and instead of just functionally selling all the time. But no one teaches you how to do that. They don't give you the skills to go from a tactical executor to a strategic leader, and that's the big miss in my eyes. People don't know how to work with other people like the military forced us to get the job done in new ways.
Yeah. And what I love, I was watching a couple of videos of yours, but one video that really stuck out in my mind is sustaining that improvement. So sustaining that continuous improvement, it seems like we improve and then we just kind of are stuck there without keeping it going.
Yeah, you got it. And you said it earlier, it's about a mindset. And I'll take it one step further and call it the growth mindset. And then I think there's a great book called Mindset that talks about growth mindsets in the mid-2000s. And I don't think anything is more important in life than to have that growth mindset. It allows you to not be defined by your failures. It allows you not to be complacent in success. It allows you to see this as an evolving journey and that there is no finish line. And that's what sustains progress with teams is getting into that mindset of growth.
And you got to have a plan too, right, Joel? I mean, you got to have a plan. You got to write stuff down. You got to write goals down. You got to identify all the different obstacles, the threats out there, right?
Exactly. I look at it two ways. You need to have both a plan for the day-to-day, but you also need to have a strategic vision. There's a quote that I love that says that vision without action is daydreaming. So if we just sit around talking about what we're going to do, but we never take action and don't have a plan, then that's daydreaming. But action without vision is a nightmare. And that's where we're just doing the day-to-day and you're getting up and go to the gym, but you don't really know why. And you're just going through the motions at your work and you don't have something that is connecting to that makes you feel good about life and a sense of purpose. And you don't want to be in either world. You don't want to just be going through the motions and you don't want to just be talking about what you're going to do without taking action.
Yeah. And you got to have a plan for the what ifs or the contingency plans, right?
Exactly. Yeah. The contingencies, map it out. And you and I know that we never had the perfect plan, but we didn't have the luxury of waiting for the perfect plan. So we started executing with an 80% plan, and then we stayed agile during execution when the inevitable pop-up threat emerged.
Yeah. What's that saying? If you don't take action, or I think it was Wayne Gretzky that says that you're going to miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah, exactly. He was a wise hockey player.
Now, what's your morning routine, brother? I mean, do you have anything special you do when you wake up?
Yeah, so it's pretty regimented. I took a note from reading Tools of Titans a couple years ago.
Tim Ferriss.
Yeah, exactly. What a great book. And he talks to all these leaders and finds out, you know, what are the commonalities between them. And to a person, they all got up early. I'm not a morning person. That didn't excite me very much. But I have found that there is a miracle hour that you have access to if you get up early and you start your day before everybody else. So as much as I hate doing it and nobody likes the alarm clock, I get up before the sun's up and spend some time meditating. I've been getting into mindfulness and really liking that. I'm a spiritual guy. I'm a Christian. And so that part of it is important to me as well. I spend some time in the Word. And then something physical. And I like Jocko's approach where he says, you know, get a win early in the day by doing something physical and getting that out of the way. And it sets you up for success the rest of the day.
Yeah, I always see Jocko's Instagram pics where he shows a picture of his watch and it's like 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. And I say that's too far.
I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Well, the guy's a SEAL, so you know he's used to that stuff. So what are your favorite books, brother? I know you talked about Tools of the Titans, Tim Ferriss. What else do you like to read?
So the best one I've read in the past year is a book, and I liked it so much, I connected with the author, and I just got back from a spearfishing trip with him. It was amazing. This guy who's from Argentina, the book is called The Meaning Revolution. His name is Fred Kaufman, and he wrote this book, and he, right now he's the advisor to the CEO at Google, Sundar. and he's just this amazing guru. They call him the Yoda of Silicon Valley. But he's just got so many insights in this book, Meaning Revolution. Everybody should pick it up. It's for individual transformation. It's for team transformation. It touches on philosophy. He's a former MIT professor of economics. So pretty much the smartest guy I've ever met in my life. And he's just really good at articulating his position.
That's amazing. So how can people find you and your amazing company, brother, if they want to reach out to you, retain your services, or just connect through you with you on social?
Absolutely. So where I'm most active on social is LinkedIn. And so feel free to look me up, Joel Neeb, and I do have Thor in the title as well, since that's what I'm known as in our brand. And then at afterburner.com, you can go find out more about our organization, see the type of work we do. And we always like connecting with new groups and especially military members or a corporate team that's looking for success. And that's what our passion's about. So.
Now, have you ever worked with law enforcement agencies, Joel? Because I really do think you guys could kick ass to the first responder arena.
You know, I think we have before my time. So I'm 7 years into my Afterburner journey, and then we're a 23-year-old company. I'm pretty sure we have in the past, but if not, I totally agree with you. Like, that's a great place for us to be injected.
Yeah, so you listeners out there, if you want to reach out through or hit Joel up on Instagram. Check out Afterburner. They can do amazing things for your organization. Brother, thank you so much for your service, kicking the shit out of cancer. Thank you for being here. Thank God you're here. Hope the family's doing okay. Much success to you and yours in the future, brother.
Patrick, thanks so much. Really appreciate the work you're doing as well and getting our voices out there and serving the community while bringing forth former service members along the way. Great stuff.
All right, brother. Thank you. Take care. Such an honor talking to Joel Thor Neeb, and very inspirational too. He truly is very motivating. And if you're interested in Afterburner and the great things that they are doing with this company, head over to afterburner.com. They have just amazing speakers, including Joel. Remember, they hold the key to flawless execution. Again, go to afterburner.com and see what they can do for your organization or individually. Stay tuned, folks, for more great guests on the CJ Evolution Podcast.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.